Hi guys, welcome to the Accounting Tech Tar Pit, presented by Early Adopters Hub, the accelerator for accounting tech. I'm your host, Jack Teal, and this is a podcast for accounting tech startup founders focused on no BS, candid conversations about the challenges and benefits of building a startup in the accounting industry. Welcome everyone. Really looking forward to today's conversation with a fantastic up-and-coming founder. People at this stage in the journey often don't get the opportunity to share their story, but there are plenty of challenges in the early days, so we're keen to open those up for the betterment of the potential founders who are listening in. Our guest is an accountant with his own firm called Slick, an ultra-modern tech-focused accountancy. He's also co-founded Apicus, an app advisory consultancy, and is now on a relatively new journey building a startup called TaxTorch. So fantastic to have you here, Robert. How are you doing?
Yeah, really good. Thanks. Looking forward to the chat today.
Awesome. So look, we have spoken to a number of founders, or we are speaking to a number of founders, all coming with different backgrounds, a few accountants turned founders. So keen to understand, how did you kind of end up on this journey of building a tech startup, and why did you do it?
Oh, I guess quite a long story. going back to the start, I guess, well, I graduated with an accountancy degree back in 2003. Had sort of various different office jobs after which, and then I took a wee bit of a hiatus to become a poker player for 4 years. So went through that whole experience of sounding glamorous, but really just sit behind the computer screen with the odd bit of travel thrown in. Decided that I wanted to go back into accountancy, which was what I did originally. Went to work for sort of multiple different firms throughout my career, all different managerial levels. And my last role was basically being a cloud project manager, so helping lots of different clients move to cloud. I think you mentioned there, started Apicus and then Slick, and now here we are, the next stage of that evolution being TaxTorch.
Yeah, so you've obviously come to terms with the risk if you were out there being a poker player, and now you've come to building a startup. I suppose in terms of that journey with TaxTorch, you know, what milestone have you recently achieved, and kind of what's next on your radar, just to kind of set the scene as to where you're at in the journey?
Yeah, we're through what I'd call the second build at the minute. We had the first build, which we can maybe chat about a bit later, but the second build, I'd say we're through that experience. We've done a bit of market research now, we've done a bit of the product validation, and we're now into the nuts and bolts of actually building the product.
Yeah, okay, cool. Yeah, I'm sure we'll get into all of that, because there's a number of things that we've already had a bit of a discussion about that we're keen to explore. One of the things I do want to talk about is the level of confidence that you kind of have in the idea, or you know, the product that you're building now, versus the confidence you had originally, and how that has changed over the course of, you know, the last few years.
I'd say confidence I had originally was, it's 100% going to work. There's absolutely nothing holding us back. There's no roadblocks here. Very, very naive, I think. I think that that's changed with the experience of the development side and things. I'm now, I'd say, downgraded to confident. But I think it's just really at the minute we're going through these pain points and unknowns, and every time we go over one of them, we're having to be quite, I guess, resilient with every problem we face and having to overcome each hurdle. But we are getting there. But again, it's, I guess, that massive distinction between the idea and showing someone the idea, and then what the actual finished product is going to be, and then getting obviously that feedback and opinions on it.
Yeah, so is that for you the primary challenge at the moment, going from idea to product, or was there a challenge in, you know, obviously you're an accountant, you're on an accounting firm, and yeah, and this is a pain point you felt. You know, was there a challenge in even making sure that other people had the same pain?
Yeah. I mean, it started from my initial pain of, I'm doing this for my clients. I've got to the stage where I've got clients that have got multiple income streams, multiple different businesses, and not been able to sort of proactively tax plan. So I speak to other people and they're like, yeah, we have that problem as well, but it's sort of always been that way. And I think with sort of the latest accounting tech and APIs and things being connected, I was like, there should be a solution to solve this problem, and there wasn't. So that's what sort of led to the thinking and concept behind it. Well, why not build it ourselves if it doesn't exist?
And so that was purely based off of your own pain point with a few conversations with a few other people. Now, I know that that original concept changed, you know, quite drastically to where you are now. I think the words that you used were, you know, you were thinking too big for the initial product. You got carried away with a lot of the possibilities and didn't necessarily realize how big of a job that was. Can you talk us through that journey that you went through and having to maybe, you know, bring your expectations back as to what you could actually deliver?
Yeah, I would say I got very, very excited. that was the main thing behind it. I just kept, I think you have the idea and then you start sort of building the plan and then you just keep adding to it and adding to it and adding to it, not realizing that every time you add to it, it adds complexity, it adds confusion, it adds development time. And I think the sort of biggest learning part I've had is being able to communicate in developer language, because this was probably the biggest thing I've went through, is that accountants and developers speak completely different languages. They're not even remotely close. In my eyes, I said, draw a square, and I came back and it was a circle, and I said, no, I wanted a square, and came back, it was a star. It is that sort of level of, well, this is obvious what I want, but actually portraying that into the way that a developer understands it has been the massive, massive learning for myself.
Yeah, okay. And I suppose in terms of understanding when, you know, you realized that you were adding complexity, how do you change focus or become focused and laser focused, what is the kind of term that we would refer to? How do you change your mindset to be that way?
Well, I think we got to the point where we realized the first build probably isn't going to happen, in terms of slow progress, things not being correct, actually probably understanding the scale of what we're trying to achieve. So that was when I had a chat with an accountant who sort of recommended you guys. And I think that was at the point where we did a bit of market research and stuff. We actually got that focus, I guess, that was on speaking to accountants who were probably independent, because all the accountants I'd spoken to, I had a sort of relationship with, who always tell me everything's fantastic, it's going to be great, they'll pay thousands of pounds for it and stuff. But then actually speaking to accountants maybe I didn't have that sort of personal relationship with, you get that honest feedback and you start to see actually you're making a lot of assumptions here. You're maybe building stuff which isn't needed. It's in terms of this part is really technically complex, but the value adds is very little, so why are you doing that? And I think that's when we actually revisited it and we decided that version one isn't actually practical to do at this stage. We have to shrink it down, remove a lot of parts of it that were very low value, and concentrate on those main pain points for accountants.
Yeah, okay. So a lot of founders out there are accountants and they're building products based off of their personal experience or based off of, you know, a few conversations they've had with colleagues, peers, people along those lines. So you obviously had those same conversations. What is it that was different about having an independent conversation versus, you know, one with someone you know? And now knowing what you know about that difference, could you just apply those same lessons to the people that you knew originally?
That's a good question. Potentially, I think when you have that personal connection with people, they want to tell you what you want to hear. And I think that's what it comes down to. They will tell you that no matter what you say, it's a good idea. And I think only by having that independent chat, people say, that's a good idea, but, or what about this? Or have you thought about doing this? And you get all those extra ideas, especially I think when you're in more of a group setting and the ideas start bouncing off each other and people start challenging each other. Because even some of the conversations, people will say, this is really high valuable, we need this. And then 5 minutes into the chat, they're saying, well, actually, maybe we don't. But if you hadn't have had that and you hadn't have drilled down into it, you would have went away and spent 2 months building something which people actually didn't find valuable. It was just an off-the-cuff comment.
Yeah, and I think that that's something that we speak to even experienced founders about, the silver bullet the dream feature that somebody comes asking for that's going to unravel, you know, the journey for you and lead to exponential growth. Just one more thing, and not drilling into those feature requests properly. So that's quite interesting. And I mean, when it comes to the technical side of actually taking what people say and putting it into practice and building a product, you're obviously an accountant by background. How have you gone through that process of understanding how to build a product and the stages involved and wrapping your head around the technical side?
Yeah, so we've probably done it in a bit of a scattergun approach. We probably jumped in with both feet and then get pulled out of the water and then had to sort of review it from a distance again. But I guess it's all part of the learning for us, because every time we do something, we learn that's the correct way of doing it, that's not the correct way of doing it, and it gets us more focused. And I think if we hadn't have went through that journey and went through that pain, we wouldn't be at the stage we're at today. But it does involve, I say, being really resilient and really adaptable, because the plan you had, especially in the early stages, the plan you have in week one is very different to the plan you have in week four. And that's very different from 4 weeks down the line. And it's just that constant evolution of the plan and of the thinking, and not to get too married to anything. And I think that's hard at the start when you come up with this idea and you think it's great and everyone's going to love it. And then people start giving you feedback on it, and it's time to sort of take a step back and not take that personally and realize that that feedback's exactly what you need to hear. And it's exactly what's going to help the product get to the next level. Take it on board and realize that the advice that people are giving you is to help you, even though sometimes it may feel like a bit of a punch in the gut.
Robert, just to follow up on that, I mean, you touch on something that we see is quite difficult and challenging, and we find really the only way to overcome it, that what you're saying, is that at the end of the day, you're there to build a good product and solve a problem. It's not about your ego and proving to the world that your vision was correct, even though you know, all the naysayers said you're never going to make it. Do you think being an accountant is that what potentially there's that passion of, I can put my ego aside, I just want to solve the problem, or is it something else?
I think being an accountant helps, especially if you've been involved in the cloud space recently, because I think if you look at the most traditional accountant, it's used to doing things the same way all the time, and it's always been that way since 20, 30 years. I think now in this sort of new world of accounting, with these new apps and new technology, the person has to be adaptable, and they're used to things changing at a lot quicker pace, and you're using all these new softwares, you might ditch a software and bring a new one in, whereas historically you used the software and that was it. You were using that for the next 10 years and there was no questions. So I think being an accountant helped in that essence, because I was used to the constantly changing, constantly evolving space.
And what, sorry, Jack, but so what do you think were the disadvantages of being an accountant, building a tech product? I guess you kind of touched on it, but would you say there's anything else?
Yeah, I guess it would be the assumption side of it. I think if you come in with no knowledge, you'd maybe be able to sort of just go in with a questioning mind. Whereas I think as an accountant, because you already have a lot of the knowledge, you're going in with this idea of, oh, well, this is the way it's done. And it's the way I've done it from my roles, is it's always been done this way, or it's always been done that way. But then realizing that my own experience in the grand scheme of things is minuscule, it's about hearing those other people's opinions and say, actually, we do this slightly differently. And then trying to, I guess, not come up with a way that suits everyone, but trying to find what the most aligned ways are. So trying to find out, well, if most people are doing it this way and most people have that problem, then that's the main focus, rather than maybe trying to solve my own personal issues, which is a whole different episode.
And obviously one of the benefits of being an accountant who's still running a firm whilst doing this is you're not entirely reliant on making this product work with a very limited short runway. But obviously it means your focus is split between the firm that you're running and the product you're trying to build. So how do you manage that? And are there other advantages or disadvantages to trying to build a startup whilst running an accounting practice?
Yep. Lots of coffee is the start of it. That keeps you going. But I think it is difficult because I think a lot of the things require, especially at the beginning period, you need to have long periods to be able to think things through and tie up all the loose ends, make sure everything's connected. And that can often be quite hard when you're trying to run a firm as well, because you have clients and clients can sometimes be quite needy and phone you up and email you and need things urgently and stuff. So a lot of the time you're having to drop what you're doing to deal with an immediate and then come back to it. And then it's trying to get back into that headspace and picking things up again. So it is a bit of a balancing act. And I think it's, if I had if I was in a position to do it full time on Tax Search at the minute, that would be fantastic. But it would also take me away from serving the clients, which is what this product is trying to help.
Do you think, though, that there's an aspect of additional focus that you get by having it? You know, we talk about startups generally having limited resources, even if they are full time. In your case, you're even more limited by the amount of time you have available to spend on it. I don't know how you feel about that, but does that give you more focus so that when you are working on Tax Torch, you're able to really focus, or are you distracted?
Part distracted, part focused, I would say is the honest answer. The focus part is when a situation arises and I'm like, I've got a product that's perfect for that. It's just not built yet. So there is that sort of thing. And I think more and more of these conversations are creeping up where I'm like, if we had Tax Torch up and running, I would have access to this right now. But I guess it comes back to clients always think these things are quick answers. And it is a case of, oh, I've got a wee quick one for you. And then they ask you a question and you're like, well, that's hours of work to try and go and gather all the information and update it. And even when we do this work, it's at a singular point in time. So I can tell you it for today, but by next week, it'll be out of date. So yeah, it does focus me in that regard, because every time I have one of those conversations, I'm like, do you know what? I need to now put more of my time and more of my effort into Tax Torch, because the sooner I get this up and running, the sooner we're able to deal with these queries a lot easier.
And so if you look forward from where you are now, what do you kind of see as your next milestone, or what's the big challenge that you're trying to overcome at this stage of the journey as you're kind of building product 2.0?
Yeah, we're sort of mid-development at the minute. So the next stage is to get the product developed. We're then going to do a round of beta testing, which I think I'm really looking forward to getting the sort of feedback on that and make sure that we're actually, maybe try and make sure we're not having that disconnect between the idea and the end product. Because I think one of the things that I found a bit of a challenge, I think, during the development is always going back to the feedback at the beginning and say, we're building all these things, we're adding bells and whistles, but is it actually doing that main thing? And that's a continual thing that I'm doing, probably on a weekly, monthly basis, is going back and saying, that's great, we've changed that, but is it still hitting that pain point? Is it still solving this problem? Because I have on a few occasions went off on a tangent, and I actually done it yesterday as well, where I was like, for this page, we could add this, we could do this, and just, again, trying to control that urge to add all the things onto it that we can, and just reel it back and say, I could add these things right now, but they don't need to be part of the MVP. They could come later. We need the focus to be now on the actual build.
Robert, just to maybe expand on that a little bit, because you are facing quite a big challenge, especially when the development takes longer than you want, which pretty much it always does.
Yeah.
But how do you make sure, like you touched on a little bit, that you don't lose sight of the actual pain points that you're trying to solve, that you don't get a bit too carried away with the product and you start falling in love with the solution that you're building, which is becoming your baby?
Yeah.
And always remember what's the actual pain points and you're trying to solve and the value this product is supposed to deliver.
Yeah, well, when we did the market research at the beginning and we had the videos and we had notes and things, I'm constantly referring back to those. I took the time of going through them all. I noted down everyone's opinions, what they thought was most important, what they thought was less important, what they felt wasn't important at all. And that is basically my guide for when we get to these things. Every time we're talking about a page on the website or a page in the product, does it tie back to this? Because if it doesn't, then we are losing focus. I guess the other thing would be the sort of communication as well, is being in regular communication with people, especially the development. Because I say, when you ask for a page and you know what you want and it comes back and it's not what you expected, it is about that. Is there any point in moving on to try and maybe get multiple things done, or do we need to really nail this part down? And that's a continual process.
And just to follow up on that, have you had situations, basically, I think, you know, the sunk cost fallacy is a big driver for a lot of humans and especially entrepreneurs. Have you had situations in the past where you kind of like, you hesitated, do I pursue or do I just understand this is a sunk cost and I should put it in a bin and move on?
At the end of version one, that was the position we were in. I say we'd spent a lot of money and a lot of time and effort getting to version one of the product, having it designed, having it part built. And then I think once we'd done the extra market research, extra work, we realised that this isn't going to do what we wanted to do. And it is a tough pill to swallow at the time, because it's like, we've wasted this money, we spent money, we spent a lot of time, we're going to effectively get rid of this product, but the positive to take from it is we've learned a lot of lessons. And even though looking back now, I used the word wasted money and wasted it, we didn't, because if we hadn't have done that, we wouldn't be in the position we're in now. So I guess to look at it the other way, it's part of the process, and going through that pain has got us to where we are just now.
And maybe just a final question on that angle, but, you know, just actually saw on LinkedIn a couple of days ago about a founder of a legal tech startup that basically said it took him 6 years and a lot of VC money to realize that actually they should pivot into a completely different direction. So you obviously, it took you a bit of time, but not nearly as long. So yeah. What do you think is the key to kind of like make that pivot as early as possible?
The key, I think, is speak to the potential customers as quickly as possible. I think if we'd have done that, we'd have probably went down a different route earlier. But I guess probably me being quite naive was thinking, well, people want to see something, they want to see a product first and then get feedback and then change it. Whereas I think even now, knowing what I know about the development side, that can be like trying to turn a cruise ship. It's not an easy thing. So actually doing all the work and doing all the chats and trying to explain your vision to people while getting that honest feedback back, I think is just invaluable. And if I were to start another product tomorrow, the first thing I would do is go out and ask questions, get lots of feedback, and do that before we even thought about building or investing lots of money.
I want to kind of go back to just a couple of questions ago when Johan was talking to you about kind of, you know, your decision to, or you were talking about it as well, your decision to park version 1.0 and kind of restart that journey. It's really tempting for an early stage startup because of the sunk cost, but also because of what you read out there, you know, whether it's LinkedIn, whether it's, you know, really anywhere to do with startups, that you kind of got to get something out there and you got to get people using it and testing it. And you're going to quickly, you know, test, measure, learn. You're going to iterate really quickly by getting it in people's hands. If you had launched version 1.0 with that mindset versus taking the approach that you did, which is to bin it and go again with version 2.0, what do you think the outcome would be right now? Would you not have been able to test, measure, learn and improve that product?
I don't think so. that was sort of the point we'd reached where, is it worth to keep going? Because a bit of me felt like because I was stopping that version, I was quitting. And it was a bit like, oh, I'm just giving up in this. And that didn't really sit well with me. And it was quite a tough decision. But I think from where we were, once we realised and we started having chats that this is trying to do far too much. I mean, what we had in version one included like an asset manager and lots of different bells and whistles to it and stuff. And you're like, that could actually be like two or three separate products. And we're trying to do it all at once. And then with the actual tax computations and all the development work that has to go beyond that, I felt as if we just had far, far too many parts. And it was a tough decision to say that, but we did have that conversation of, is it better to keep going with this and trying to make this work, or do we cut ties and start again? And basically cut ties was the winner.
not an easy decision to make. And I think, you know, a lot of other startup founders haven't taken that route and have ended up in, you know, the tar pit, you know, we're here talking about it. So I suppose to wrap this up on that topic, is there anything any advice that you have for early stage startup founders or potential founders who are thinking about it when it comes to tar pit ideas on theme? You know, anything out there that you think was told to you or that you looked at and that on the surface seemed like an amazing idea that just absolutely is something you would avoid next time around?
I think the thing would probably be the investment side. Investment side in itself is a tricky area. But I think we were probably of that mindset of you have to have investment. Like that's the aim. You go, you start, you get investment, you build the product, you get more investment, etc., etc. But I think one of the things that probably people don't tell you is the amount of time investment it takes to actually get investment. And I probably sank probably 3 months of time into doing all the things that I had to do to potentially get investment. And then actually when we started having those first chats with investors, I realized we're not ready for investment. we're not at the right point to take on investment. So I guess for some people it's going to be a balancing act of, do you actually need that investment to go and get that initially, or is it better to sort of do it on a shoestring and try and get the interest from the community, get that initial MVP out and start getting paying customers, and then reevaluate where you're at? Yeah. And I think the other thing for that question would probably be the marketing side as well, where it was just go out and try and grow as many customers and get as many potential customers as you can ready. And I guess for us as well, it's like, because this is going to be, it's going to take a period of time before we're actually ready post beta testing to launch it. We didn't want to say we're building this amazing product and, oh, by the way, it might be ready in 18 months time. That's what we didn't want to do. So I think it's about maybe focusing our time and efforts on the actual product now, getting it beta tested, making sure it's solving those problems, and then work towards building that audience of potential customers.
And we obviously wish you all the best with it, Robert. Thank you very much for taking the time to have a chat with us. Some awesome insights there around how you're juggling running an accounting firm and building a startup, and, you know, how hard the decision is, but, you know, maybe looking back in hindsight, how good it was to ditch version number one for where you are now. So thanks again for your time.
Yeah, no, thanks a lot, guys. Really enjoyed the chat.
Thank you once again for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed the episode. If you are a potential founder in your early stages of developing a product or elsewhere in the journey struggling to achieve product market fit, we would love for you to reach out at www.earlyadoptershub.com. This has been another episode of the Accounting Tech Tar Pit, presented by Early Adopters Hub, the accelerator for accounting tech.